I'll go up to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, is the automatically deleted husband. Hi. Several things. One is just a quick thought on the previous discussion about Romans 13 and so forth, because I mentioned the idea that good has, there's eu and agathos in the Greek, and they have slightly different meanings. And the thought I had as an example, a way to perhaps explain this and pursue this further, is the idea that candy may taste good, but it's not good for you. So it's good, but not good, because it's a different meaning. And I think that may be a good reference point as a way to pursue this idea further. But the image I plan to use today, I saw there is a guy has he's a Syrian living in Germany, and he has a thing called Syriana analysis that is actually extremely good, and he's done this before, where he's taken something that was official from the Syrian government, specifically Bashar al-Assad, and did the translation and gave it on the screen and for you to view. He basically did it essentially unedited, because obviously most of the Western world will ignore him. but there was a comment, and what I did is I captured the image, because what he said, the translation is, "We must know that the law is not what is written, but rather what is applied." His conversation was in reference to how the West may have set out all these rules and doctrines and whatnot, but they don't apply it. And he's absolutely right. And, you know, because the reason it obviously rings a bell is because it's the institutional church. It's what my wife does. You know, there are rules. It doesn't apply to us. You know, I've mentioned before, when you go and have a war, a real shooting war, the winner will typically have no crimes against them. They won. So it's, you know, how do you accuse the victor of doing something wrong? The loser, you can find, that person did this, that person that did that, and so forth. The winner, no. Because it's not that the rules matter. It's who has the power. Or in his words, the law is not what is written, but what is applied. And, you know, so I see this not only in institutional church, but obviously in my family. So I found that really interesting. Today, because it was Chris's fourth day of his four-day weekend, we did take a hike. And it was a modest hike, but it was a joy. It is a joy to do that with a friend. It really is. It is marvelous, because there's mutual encouragement. There's mutual love. But speaking of love, I'm seeing that in other ways. One is what I'm trying to do myself. I spent a long time, days and days, writing and rewriting a letter. And because my printer is sitting here and it has some issues, I couldn't print it out. And I sent it to email to Chris, and he delivered it today. So I'm going to take the letter that I wrote and send it to Marion, Illinois, to the prison there, to prisoner number 26069-075. This is going to Mr. Daniel Everett Hale. The man I did the All Hail the Whistleblower about, that video, almost a year ago. It has been extremely emotional for me. When I write things, what I tend to do, things that I want to be clear, I will write them and then I'll read them out loud because I can hear things when I read it that say, okay, that doesn't sound right. And I've done that several times with this, and I break down reading it. This is a really, really big deal. Daniel Hale is in prison because he exposed what the U.S. government did in the drone program, that we kill mostly civilians and kids. It's like Bashar al-Assad saying, we must know that the law is not what is written, rather what is applied. In that same sense, it doesn't matter what the U.S. laws are. The U.S. will kill large numbers of people. And we're good and they're bad. And if you point it out, they'll send you to jail, as Daniel Hale is in prison today. Because I've read more of some of the things he's written, I think he has the ability with words. And when he gets out, he may, Lord willing, be able to make use of that. I hope it's in obedience to Christ, but because there's a hint of that, but only a hint. And you know, I write him directly. I want to meet him. Of all the whistleblowers, big names and little names, I want to meet him. One last thing. I wrote a letter to a friend. My Latter-day Saint friend in Utah. And the title is, Jesus is the Creator that entered his creation to redeem his elect. It is a thesis statement that I've used for some time, for some years now. Because I would contend it is an accurate summary of who Jesus is and his purpose in creation. And I went through some what I think, just kind of a first couple things of basics that, without going into extreme detail, but some basic ideas, starting with, in the beginning, is when that those words in Genesis 1, is God creating time itself. And what that gives is that God is outside of creation. The universe and time itself is a creation of God. God is not in the universe, existing in time, and has to essentially obey those rules. He is outside of the universe, outside of time, and creates both. And then there's numerous things that went on from that. I'll put the letter in the webpage, because I did share it. I sent it to my friend, and then I shared a semi-sanitized version, because you know some personal things. He's a friend, and I want to make sure that friendship stays. To my joy, I sent it to him and a bunch of other people. Thus far, I've gotten one response from him, from my friend. The one line, because I responded to him already, saying, we'll go into it more later, is my third, he wrote, my first thought was, I'm going to be late for work. Because of his, you know, because he's enjoying the dialogue. What I'm finding such a big deal here, you know, he went and explained why he's basically said I'm wrong. And I take such joy in that. Here's somebody with a foundational difference in what we stand on, what we believe, what we will contend is true. You know, I thought about it. I took that hike with Chris today. My friend he and I, we've talked about, I don't remember if it was, I think we actually did it on a phone call. We have a desire to take a long hike together. He even said, we need to find a way to sit down for several days and go dig deep. To have that kind of relation, I find such a great joy. I so desire to find a Muslim to do the same. I really do. And an atheist. You know, I reached out to the one atheist, what did he call it? The harmonic atheist. The one that Eric Lee gave the interview to. Cold. Closed the door. Deleted, you know, silent. He attempted to silence me. And, you know, that's... That gives the aura of cowardice, doesn't it? I really find that unfortunate that that's what I get from the PCA or institutional church. They won't come to the table. And we should be in pretty solid agreement of what I wrote. I may have been too strong. You know, when I say that time is a creation of God, somebody... may be willing to acknowledge that, but it adds a weight that I think a lot of people will say, no, I don't want to go that far. You know, when, because one of the references I gave is when Jesus said, you've seen me, you've seen the Father, or no one has seen the Father except who the Father sent, which is Jesus. So there's a separation but a unity, which is, you know, this is the argument about the Trinity. And, well, basically I describe the Trinity in words that are slightly different than perhaps the norm. But what I got is basically, no, you're wrong, and this is why. And, of course, you know, some of his reference is the Pearl of Great Price, which obviously the Protestant Roman Catholic community would not endorse. But the willingness to do that. This week, I'm starting Monday with a joyful hike with Chris. I sent the email yesterday and got a response today. On it that brought me such joy. I am planning tonight, tomorrow, because I have downloaded the last two sermons. The last two, I downloaded the English sermons because I did actually download the Russian ones. Kind of like, no, sorry. clueless. But, you know, because I'm trying to prepare for Wednesday. Because on Wednesday, I have this meeting with Andre Yakovenko. Yakovenko. Maybe I got that right. We'll see. And, you know, obviously I've seen him on video. But to be able to do that, for that willingness to engage me, I am overjoyed. If something comes of it, I don't know. But, you know, as I expressed in my email, yeah, I'm a kind of a pushy guy. I've become far more pushy than ever before. Because, I've been working for years, mostly just trying to refine the idea, the technique, because I haven't had time to put intense work on it, although the desire is growing. And I am doing some more on the foundation of Shofar Nexus, but the Shofar Book Project. Because as it's matured, the idea is, you know, it's so easy to say, I want to give you my perspective of what the gospel is. I want to give you a book from a famous author. I want to send you to my institutional church, or just go to the one down the street, because I want you to know Christ. That's fairly common. But what I want to do is I want to set before you the tools to go to essentially, and I really think, you know, because initially I thought is it's Islam and Christianity, so the Bible and the Quran. You know, I thought, well, should we add things like the dual canonical books, you know, the Apocrypha, the extra books that the Roman Catholics have? Should we add those? There's some that you know, like the Eastern Orthodox have. And then, of course, because of my relationship in the LDS community, should I add the Quad? You know, the Pearl of Great Price, the Book of Mormon, Doctrines and Covenants. And I think that would make sense. Then, of course, you can get to the Hindu Vedas, and there's so many others. I think, what is it the Zoroastrians have? I don't remember. But there are other things that are possible. But I do think, fundamentally, you get the largest audience with the Bible and the Quran, and then adding the nuances. But as I've been working through that, there's the idea of saying, I don't want to put in commentaries, because that's so easy to find. I don't want to give commentaries. I want to give you the tools. I want to put in things like dictionaries. Strong's, Thayer's, and so forth, and Brown Driver Briggs. These are public domain because they're rather old. So put those in, but give a little bit better tools so that it's not just simply, because again, one of the big issues with, for example, Strong's numbers, yes, it's helpful, but it gets you partway because it doesn't give you the different tenses of a word. And I want to include that. So, there are some cases where it does, some cases where it doesn't. And so I want to include that because, you know, it's like, off the top of my head, because I'm not clear on this, you know, like anthropos, there's the masculine version and the neuter version, I think. I gotta verify that. Because anthropos is aner, man, and it's the idea of looks like a man, which includes women in context. But then there's the male and female version of the word, or the male and the neuter version of the word, I think that's right. Don't quote me on that one, but I think that's... But so I want to put those tools in so it's easy for the novice. I'm not trying to give fancy tools for somebody who has 14 doctorates in Greek and Hebrew and whatnot. I want to give it so the guy who's kind of like, huh? And maybe possibly so the guy who speaks Russian or, German or whatnot can have the tools and go from that language to the Greek or the Hebrew and maybe interrelate. I really think that's important because when I, again, the obvious, the Philonikos, the idea of the triumph or vanquish of brother, being we have no such practice, and seeing that as contentious versus the idea of to contend for the faith, which is the agonizomai or apogonizomai, to see that difference, I think is vital. And I don't want to write a commentary for somebody. I want to give them the tools to find these things themselves. That I find that vital because I'm not the reference. Because if I make a commentary, because you know I've gone through some of the things I've done, and well, actually, I either said it wrong, or I was unclear, or I've been refined, or I found out I'm playing wrong. You know, those things happen. And I want to put those tools in the hands of others, but the other aspect is, you know, just like the idea of, you know, I've used the example before. The Quran says, "Do not say three." Whereas, okay, I want to give the tools for somebody who is a Muslim to be able to say, all right, I see where the Quran says that. Why does it say that? Because somebody is saying three. And where is that found? Where is that found in the Bible? Which, because, you know, the Trinity is not a word you find in the Bible, but the concept is there. But so how do you interrelate them? How do you make the tools to give somebody where they can see, okay, there's a relationship here, and now I can interact in order to decide which is true. But then going, you know, because again, the response I got, he did quote again, which I've heard before, line from, because I will contend, what we understand, when I talk with my, I think the local Latter-day Saints, I think we've had the same conversation. They're polytheists, all right? They're multiple gods in as they see this. And he gives a little bit of an explanation why they see it that way. There is a... I don't see it in the... all right, here it is. From around 1900, the president prophet, Lorenzo Snow, the fifth president prophet of the LDS Church from 1898 to 1901. You know, because they, like the Roman Catholic Pope, they give a significant degree of authority to their president. But his statement, which I've heard others use, because it's a well-known statement, as man now is, God once was. As God now is, man may be. You know, so, you know, the idea there is that we as man are what Jesus Christ was long ago. And we have the opportunity to be like him, in other words, to be God. And I will contend he's wrong. He will contend I'm wrong. And then we'll sit down and take a hike together. Lord willing, that will transpire. But, because I want to be able, I've seen so many people, the LDS is the obvious example, go after them and say, I got to go hit him over the head to convert them. I want to show them this verse as a gotcha. And I've seen that. And it's kind of like, in some cases, it works. But I think what really works is one of two things. One is you give them the tools to see it themselves. And the other is you befriend them. You walk with them. You engage them and never give up. In the process, I think it refines you. And if indeed Jesus Christ is the Lord I claim he is, then it is not me who will convert him. Because, again, that's not my job. But it will be the Lord if he has chosen, not will choose, but has chosen, my friend as one of his. Maybe one day we'll celebrate that together. And of course, my friend would say the compliment that he would one day hope that I would see the light that as God now is, that man may be, and that I could be one of those. So, I mean, that would be an act of love. I mean, that makes sense. The same way as a Muslim would look at me and say, they want me to see that the Bible is distorted. And Muhammad was the last prophet and gave us the true eternal word of God. That would make sense. And obviously I would do the compliment with them. So, but as I read the Bible, it's very clear we have no teacher but the Lord. The Lord calls who he calls. So it's not my job to go say, I've got to convert you. Again, you go halfway around the world to make a single proselyte and make him twice the son of another devil as you are. This is not a command of God to go do this. This is saying, if you do this, this is not a good idea. But our call to proclaim and to love. So as I do this, I do wonder, I need to find maybe some people who say, yes, I want to do this. I want to come from the Mormon perspective, from the Muslim perspective, from the Roman Catholic perspective, and maybe from different Protestant perspectives, and work together to provide a tool, not a commentary. I'd like to figure out how to do that. The technology, not a problem. That interaction, extremely difficult. Perhaps that would be part of something that may come from Wednesday with Andre. And it may be, anyway. These are, one of the things that was discussed today, Chris came early, and, early in the sense that came by, we shared a meal, and then we took her a hike. In the conversation, one of the things I stated was that one of the differences, my wife abandoned me in 8 days, it'll be 10 years. When she abandoned me, it was obviously a huge loss for me. Ripped my heart out. But in the Lord's grace, He's given me some other things. One is, again, I'm easily the healthiest I've been in my life. I mean, the hike we did today was nothing. Because it was, I was only at 4 or 5 miles. Nothing. We did have, it was hot, so sweaty. But no fatigue or anything. I came home. I did check for ticks. There was one tick on me. But then shortly after I got home, I decided I needed a shower. So before I showered, I did 256 jumping jacks, after the hike. So, I'm in good shape. There's a plus there. I'd rather have my wife. But the other thing is the amount of time I've spent in studying the scripture and engaging people, doing what I'm planning on, what I'm doing with my Mormon friends, what I'm planning to do on Wednesday, what I do with people when I meet them face-to-face in the street because I approach people. I wasn't like that with my wife around. And I don't know if I would have become that way. But there is, Paul talks about, it's in 1 Corinthians 6, 6 or 7, about, I think, yeah, 7, about the unmarried and the widowed, I'm kind of a borderline in this, because obviously verse 27, are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. Well, I'm bound to a wife. I do not seek to be free from her. She just abandoned me. So I'm kind of a. Because he talks, verse 32, I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife. And his interests are divided. And I'm kind of in the border of that, because I am a married man, but my wife has abandoned me and taken the kids away from me. And so in one sense, I have been freed from those normal pressures, but at the same time, the effort I put into reconciliation is, an anxiety. And my interest is divided. But at the same time, what I do, again, when I try to promote, try to find people to get involved with Shelf or Nexus in the secure communications area, it scares the living daylights out of them, or I'm on the wrong side of the NSA. And I can see, especially a married man would say, I'm anxious about worldly things and how to please his wife. I don't get involved in that. I can see that. I have nothing to lose. So I have to be careful not to press on with arrogance, but with love and obedience to Christ. And so the advantage I have when I write my LDS friend is that I write typically write, which allows me time to read and say, all right, I want to make sure that I don't say something offensive and make sure I include in there things to indicate that don't take offense at this, that I'm trying to be clear. And we've established a relationship because, again, we started off as basically enemies and very quickly became good friends. Whereas in the PCA, friends became enemies. Anyway, but I'm still trying to be obedient to Christ and love my enemies. Anyway, I want to set a model for the younger generation to pursue grace. Again, it's the generational hatred. This is part of the objective of Wednesday. Need to cut that off. Stop that. And provide the tools and encouragement and the model of somebody who says, no, there may be harm in our history, there may be harm in our present, whatnot. Let's reconcile. I want to set that model and encourage that. I also want to encourage the idea, okay, you stand as a Christian, as LDS, as a follower of Muhammad, or whatever, or you believe in the Big Bang and whatnot. And can you stand on that and then use your mind? Because most people, they're in their club, whichever club it happens to be. It's not that their mind says. And I want to encourage people, especially the young generation, especially my own kids, to use their mind. And my grandkids, but obviously I'm isolated from them. It's I want people to think. It's an act of love. I highly recommend the Thunderbolts Project, and there's another guy, See the Pattern, who he does some videos on YouTube, and because they go into a lot of the stuff about the Big Bang. The guy that does See the Pattern, I think he acknowledges that no, there's a problem to the Big Bang. Big Bang has blown up. he did an excellent, because he described the history of what we understand now as pulsars. And I find that so fascinating, the way he described it, because he said, here's the evidence, here's the suggestions of what happened, what are the various ideas. But using the electric universe model, which gets rid of the Big Bang, you can see, this is simple, it's why it happens. But at the end, he gave like 4 points. It gets rid of this, 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 and this. And what I found fascinating, they call them neutron stars. And one of the things that this electric model gets rid of is the neutron. because, you know, as you know, junior high, I remember in my physics class in like eighth grade, we had it was a science class, and we did, you know, one quarter and on you know, chemistry, one quarter and the physics and so forth. But one of the things we discussed about is obviously the idea of electron, proton, and neutron. And that's, you know, generally accepted for, you know, a hundred years or more. But I hear really strong evidence neutrons don't exist. And one of these things, when he talked about the neutron star, it says, the, you know, you look at it this way, you can see here's the evidence points to the electric model, and the electric model explains this, 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 and this, and so forth, and it eliminates things. And he gave a list, I think it was like four things. One of them eliminates the neutron, which is, I mean, fascinating. It's the, you know, we have the standard model for the atom and the structured atom model, which gets rid of the neutron. And suddenly things... Which also apparently the CERN, the Large Hadron Collider, is supposed to be literally fired up today, tomorrow, whatever, for the first time in like 3 years. And they're looking for these various things, and you're looking for something that doesn't exist. So that gets back to the idea that you want to make sure you give the tools to somebody to see. Because if, as I claim, the Bible is our only authority, it is our reference, and the Apocrypha, the Quran, and, you know, the Book of Mormon, for example, they conflict clearly. So if that's true, then at least one of those is wrong. So it's not that I have to go convince you and say, oh, look, the Book of Mormon is bad, the Pearl of Great Price is bad. No, that's just insults. The way to do this is I want to put the tools in somebody's hand so they can say, okay, this is what I believe. And I look at my evidence here and evidence here, and I can find, oh, there's the model of the electron, proton, and neutron. And here's the model of the electron, and the proton, and there's no neutron, which is true. There's the model of Jesus Christ, the creator who entered his creation, and there's the model that I can become a Christ, which is true. Do I hit you over the head to show you that I'm right? Or do I put you the tools in front of you and leave you in the hands of the Lord? Because you have no teacher but the Lord. That's my desire. I want to find someone else, others, to say yes. I want to grab onto that and run with that. And I want to find people that disagree with me, but want to run with this idea. You know, with the Book of Mormon, with the Quran. You know, with the Book of Maccabees. So forth, which, you know, I've read a few verses. I don't think I've ever read the whole thing. But anyway, getting long. This physical piece of paper goes in the mail tomorrow. You know, Lord willing, obviously. There's a lot of tears behind this. I really think thinking about it, I really wonder if all the people I talk with, my friend in Utah, my friends here in town, it's unquestionable Chris is my brother. We have a love, a bond that I think will go to our dying day. I think that's clear. But for people that I haven't physically met, going to Utah, I mean, I actually have motivation. I don't want to travel anymore, but I have motivation. But one person that I want to meet that I've never actually corresponded with yet, one person that I would like to become a friend with, one person that I would really like to love, is Daniel Hale. I have no idea why. I do know that what he wrote sunk in. Because what he wrote, the way he wrote it, I saw me. You know, there's others like him, Brandon Bryant. And I don't know if we would connect, but, you know, there's an aspect about him that I've mentioned before I can connect to. The image, because it's the image I used, where he showed, you know, he used the finger gun, stuck his finger gun in his mouth to demonstrate how he did it with a 45 and didn't pull the trigger. But the way he described it, I can relate to. The desire to give up. Saying, I don't want this anymore. You know, it is that verse in Philippians, for me to live is Christ, to die is gain. And it's really easy to take that, all right, I just want the gain. I want to get out of here. I've been there. Spent 7 weeks asking the Lord in my life. But today, after those 7 weeks, I understand to die is gain, therefore death has no sting. But I am alive, and therefore for me to live is Christ, and I have to live it that way each day, which means I need to love. I need to love well, intensely, wholeheartedly. It is my hope, in however many days it takes, this will be seen as an act of love. I want to do the same kind of love with my family. I want to do with my wife. Dorothy Jane, my lady. Do you remember that guy who invested a whole lot of his time and a whole lot of his money, actually, in trying to be a pro-life advocate? He was really clumsy. He was really clumsy. He did some things that were stupid, but he was willing to do it. It's that, as I've mentioned before, it's the time that I informed the press, the local TV station in Greensboro, and I told a bunch of people, let's gather in front of the abortion clinic on whatever day it was and just have a prayer. What I did, I didn't know what I was doing. Maybe 10 people showed up. I think it was about 10 people. I didn't know what I was doing. We got in the news and whatnot. You know, it was really strange to have the cameraman there, taking the video of us doing that stuff. But what I found the most effective is the two women who walked around the abortion clinic and prayed. And it's kind of like, I did the clumsy part. I got them there. They did the valuable part. It's I did the clumsy part at Christ Community Church, where I stood up in the middle of the worship service when that was allowed and invited, and talked about pro-life things, about the Pregnancy Care Center. And several people became part of the Pregnancy Care Center because of it. I was clumsy. And then one of them became the director of the center. I was clumsy. I'm going Wednesday to meet a Russian pastor. I'm probably going to be clumsy. I may say stupid things. But Lord willing, it'll make a difference. I was clumsy in my interaction. Make a difference, not in raw, raw. Make a difference in the sense that it'll open a door for something. I was clumsy with my start of my interaction with my Latter-day Saint friends. But now I have friends who are Latter-day Saints. And we mutually understand, we disagree. This was a huge investment. I don't think there's any clumsiness in this. This is a serious act of love to a man who I understand is in a SAMS. Again, a word that really penetrates. He's being tortured by my government. And I'm trying to love him. I don't think my family understands that. That hurts. My lady, my wife, the woman I love and adore. I'm sorry, I'm getting long at times. I love you. I am, the thing that when we talked about the difference, you know, I mentioned the 1 Corinthians 7. One of the things that we talked about today, if reconciliation occurred, a lot of the things I'm doing would probably just go by the wayside. Because my focus would be my wife. I'm willing. Are you? My lady, I love you and I want you back.